All of the newest episodes of Note to Self are now available on the Luminary podcast app. It's free to download, and you can also listen to other podcasts from WNYC studios like Radiolab, Two Dope Queens, Snap Judgment, Here's the Thing with Alec Baldwin, and others. Luminary Premium is the only place where you can enjoy the entire new season of Note to Self, plus new original podcasts you won't find anywhere else, from Trevor Noah, Roxane Gay, Guy Raz, Lena Dunham, and many more. And you can enjoy them ad-free. Start your free trial by going to luminary.link/note to self or download the Luminary app for free.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
This is my thoughts. We're in a little bit like an unknown world right now with technology. I mean, there is an iPad out there that seems to be a really attractive to device to all kids, but to kids on the spectrum and to special needs kids, it has a special place. What's difficult right now is that we don't know anything about it. We don't know the effects of what this is. If we just give a kid an iPad and see what they do with it, we don't know what that's going to be like. We're basically experimenting with our own kids, much like all parents experiment with parenting. But in this case, it does seem like it might have some harmful parts. I don't blog about this so much. You know, I pretty much stay away from my fears of too much exposure, because I'd be a hypocrite, you know. I do expose my kids to a lot of the touchscreen stuff. What I do see in my own son is that he is actively engaged. He is engaged in a way that he isn't engaged with any other toy or person in this world. And when you see that kind of light bulb light up in a kid that isn't always actively engaged, you can't help but want to see that more.
So if you had to think, you know, 5, even 10 years down the road, what you would like to see happening, just paint a picture for me.
Well, I think, as I was saying before, I think that developers, app developers, need to carefully study their audiences. And that's just, you know, kids, app developers developing educational apps for all kids. I mean, those people too. But people who are developing autism apps need to carefully research and test. Test especially. A lot of people just say, oh, I can design something that can solve that. And they don't bother to pretest these things with actual kids or adults on the spectrum to see how it's being used. I mean, you can learn so much from interacting, watching a child interact with an app. So there's that. There needs to be that level of research and testing. Then there needs to be something done with the iTunes Store. It's just not working for anyone looking for educational apps. I mean, labeling something educational and just having anyone being able to label something educational is not working either.
Do you think that there might be a point where people have the same thoughts about apps and interactive technology that they do now about educational television?
That's a really good question. You know, it took television a long time to wake up to the fact that research really does help a TV product. A long time. I mean, Sesame Street's been on the air for over 40 years, and you know, they set up this model that included curriculum developers, researchers, and educators being a part of the production, and it didn't get mimicked at all. You know, along came other kids' TV shows where people are like, I know what to do for kids, and they, you know, created the Jetsons and G.I. Joe, and, you know, nothing that kids, you know, garbage, basically, that kids still watched and loved, but it wasn't educational. And it wasn't actually until Blue's Clues came around and Nickelodeon picked up on the fact that this was a heavily researched show that actually made them a lot of money. It comes down to the money, always. So maybe that's what app developers need to see, is they need to see that when you have a heavily researched and designed app for kids and kids with autism or kids with special needs, that can also make them a lot of money.
Okay, so finally, I just want to ask you, if you had advice to parents on how to deal or use technology to their benefit, both neurotypical kids, as they're called, and special needs kids, what would your advice be? And they can be different sets of advice.
Right. Well, I have a lot of advice. I think the first thing that I'm going to talk about kids with autism first. I would not just throw an iPad in front of your child. The first thing I would do is set up your iPad to eliminate certain things or put certain safeties on things. Like, the first thing I did when I set it up is I took off Safari. I took off
the browser.
Yep, the browser. I took off YouTube. I dismantled any, you know, I did not set up any email it was his alone, so I was not going to set up any way to communicate with the outside world. And I only installed apps. I took off the ability for him to install apps. I only turned on the app installer for when I wanted to. And I only installed apps that I was totally in control of. And sometimes I downloaded things and played with them first and decided this was not appropriate for him. I was very controlling about it. And I mean, that's a good way to start. I mean, you shouldn't just download something and expect it to be appropriate for your child. Sometimes there's a lot of in-app advertising, which really bothers me, because I have a kid that's so addicted to logos. He's bound to click on the advertising more than he is other things. So that in particular is like a particular, you know, pet peeve of mine. But it's always good to do that, no matter who your kid is. And then, you know, it's also good not to continually have the same apps on. Your children will outgrow certain apps and need others. So there's sort of a, you know, revamping I do every few months or so. I'll be like, okay, we're not using that one anymore. We've outgrown the ABCs one because, you know, my kids are now reading and writing more. Let's move on to, you know, and Wheels on the Bus was great when we needed it, but, you know, let's see what else we can do that's more interesting. A cluttered screen. You know, your kids have to know how to navigate things. And if you have to, like, you know, swipe through, you know, six different screens to find the app you need, that's, I don't know. I think that a lot of people forget that they can delete things. So that's another piece of advice. I don't know. I'm trying this out for the first time like everybody else. I think I tend to hawk over it a little bit more than most.
But for you, it was almost like it opened a window
right.
for your kid, for you to see your kid in a different way.
Right. And so the other thing is, I mean, and this comes from my co-viewing background, is I'm constantly co-playing or co-viewing with him. So I'm always looking over his shoulder and trying to interact with him, too, because I do want it to be an interactive device with other humans. The hard thing about iPads is that they are such a solo, they don't lend themselves to groups very well. There are a few apps out there that are like, that can be played in pairs or more. And some of them are great, but most of them are single sports, you know, and right. you just have to work. And kids with autism probably prefer that. I do let him play on his own a lot, but there are a lot of times where I like to take him out of his comfort zone to try to get language out of him, to try to get some sort of interactivity going on. It's hard. You know, I can't do it all the time.
Melissa, so great to see you.
It's great to see you, too.